We're holding on page 10 in Sanhedrin, three lines from the bottom, middle of verse Yud Aleph. We started learning yesterday, the Gemara had quoted the beginning of the Pasuk where Moshe commands the Dayanim when he tells over in Parshas Devarim about the story of how he had appointed Dayanim and he gave them the instructions on how to do their job. So we learned yesterday the part of the Pasuk where he says, he starts off saying, Vatsavas Shiftechen Ba'isahi, I commanded your judges at that time. And he said that meant that they have at their disposal a makel ritzua, a stick and a strap to beat people where necessary, but they have to be careful to be zoriz and use it only for the proper purposes. And then he continued saying, Shamoya ben achechem ushfatzem tzedek. So we said that means you can't listen to one bal din ahead when the other one is not present. So now the Gemara continues, ushfatzem tzedek, when the pasuk continues, you should judge righteously. So what is that? I mean, it obviously means the simple meaning to judge righteously, but it has to be more than that because he's already telling them that they have to. Where he continues in the following psukim not to pervert justice or anything. So Amar Shlokish tzadik asadin belibcha va'achaka choschehu. What it means is first figure it out carefully in your mind what the actual verdict is. And then decide it. So in other words, now we said, Marashar explains, in other words, the point is like this. Tzedek is Melosh and Tzedakah. And the Gemara had pointed out before that Mishpat and Tzedakah seem to be opposites. So now what it means is, so Marashar explains what it means is Tzedek is a din, try to make a pshara, following the opinions that we learned there, that before the din Torah starts, you're allowed to try to make a pshara. But then, if you didn't make a pshara, then Chaschehu, then decide it, that's that. And different other mephoshim talk about in the more straightforward sense. And for example, the Rambam brings it when he brings it in Hilchos Sanhedrin means, in other words, the Dayan has to figure out for himself and be clear in his mind what the verdict is and then say it. Not in other words, like he's saying it, a guesswork or something. Then Yehoyada talks about a couple of other possibilities. It can mean, in other words, that he shouldn't just rely on his own svara. Make sure that if he has a svara, that he has it that's solidly backed up with sources. And so forth. So all of that is included in Ushfatem Tzedek. Make sure that you judge in the Tzedek in the right way. Now the pasuk continues that you should judge. Moshe tells them, "Ben ish uven achiv uven geiroi," between a person and his between one person and his brother and his geiroi. Now the simple meaning of geiroi would mean a ger. But then the question is, why we need to mention that in general in the Torah? For most purposes, Geirim are on exactly the same level as fellow as regular born Jews. And if anything, fine. Ben Ishu Vein Ochi, Ben Ishu Vein Geiroi or something. Why Ben Ishu Vein Ochi Vein Geiroi? As though it's a three way argument. So what it means is Amar Rabbi Yehuda Afilu Ben Bayis La'Aliya. So first of all, Bein Ishu, Bein Achiv, first of all, we're darshaning, means even, for example, when you have an argument over the first floor and the second floor of a house. So say two brothers yarshin a property from their father. It's a two-story house. So the Dayan might, so Rashi explains, the Dayan might just say, you know what, you take the house, and you, Reuven, take the house, you, Shimon, take the second floor, what do you care? No, you have to actually figure out the monetary value of each one and make sure that they're getting a fair, that's fair. If the second floor, for example, is worth less, and it may well be, because it's a hassle to go up and down the stairs, then make sure that the one who's going to end up with the top floor is going to be compensated appropriately. Marshall points out another way of looking at it. Ish can mean a greater person, and Ochiv would mean his lesser, a lesser person, his younger brother or whatever. So you might say, well, then the bottom floor, which is the better one, should automatically go to the Ish, and the other one, the Aliyah, the second floor, will go to the Kotan. No, as Rashi says, figure out the actual value of it and decide accordingly. So even if you're going to think it's such a minor difference, nevertheless, don't do that. Ion Yaakov also adds the point, you know, this also goes with what we learned yesterday about not listening to one Baal Din ahead of the other. You might say, okay, Mela, you know, let's say, for example, Reuven's saying, you owe me $100, and Shimon is saying, I don't. So fine, you're not allowed to listen to one of them ahead of the other. But if they both agree, we both yashin this property, and we're just disagreeing which one should get which one, you might say, so it's not so bad. Maybe if Reuven comes to the Beis Din table and tells me first why he should get the bottom floor, maybe that's not so bad. No, Moshe is telling the Dayanim, even that, you can't. Even in a case like that, you can't do it. What's a vein geroi? Even if it's an argument over an oven and a stove. So now, same idea. So Rashi explains Geroi is Meloshin Mogur, Meloshin the dwelling place. So we mean the furnishings of the house. So the same idea, for example, you have they're splitting up the furnishings that they yarshin from their father. What are you going to say? You're going to just say arbitrarily, you got the oven, you got the stove, and have done with it. No, you have to figure out, because an oven is worth more than a stove. And therefore, so you're going to have to compensate the one who ends up with the stove. He's going to have to get the appropriate compensation for that. Marshall makes a different point as well. You might say, for example, that the brother who has more people in his household, he should get the oven. The one who has a smaller household, it's enough for him to have a stove where you can cook less with it. No, you still, that may be so, but you still have to compensate them appropriately. Other explanations of it include, first of all, how do we get that geroi means an oven and a stove? So here Rashi is saying, because meloshen mogur, it's meloshen things that are household furnishings. Sifte chamim on the pasuk makes a different point as well. We know that all the letters that are from one moitza peh, that are pronounced from the same place of articulation in the mouth, are often interchangeable. For example, aleph, hey, ches, and ayin, and so forth. Well, gimel and chaf are interchangeable. Rashi mentioned in last week's parasha, for example, on loiselech rochil, that rochil is the same as rogil. Well, then the same thing over here. Geroi, we can darshin like keroi, meaning his kira, his stove. So therefore we can say that it means that. Anaf Yosef brings a point from the Oroch as well. What it means is, in Bava Basra, deals with in detail, if a person is going to, if you have, for example, two neighbors, or upstairs and downstairs, or whatever, how far apart, so let's say, for example, the guy upstairs wants to have an oven in his apartment, how thick does the floor have to be between them so that he's allowed to do that, and then it's less likely that the heat of it is going to damage anything downstairs. Or you want to set up your oven in the chotzer near the other guy's wall, how far away from the wall does it need to be so that the heat of it won't damage the wall, that sort of thing. So now the Dayan might think to himself, well, there's no money involved. There's no money changing hands over here. It seems like some unimportant picayune kind of thing. Why should I bother with it? No, Moshe is telling the Dayanim, you have to be on top of such things as well, and judge them and tell the people what they need to do with those kinds of things as well. Next, Moshe continues to the Dayanim, lo sakiru funim b'mishpat, don't show favoritism in judgment. In the parenthetical note you have over here inserted in Ein Yaakov refers to Shmos Chaf Gimel, which is a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. There actually it doesn't quite say the same words. This is the Gemara's continuing dashing in the pasuk of Psukim in Parshas Devarim. It is true that in Mishpatim also it talks a lot about honest justice. But anyway, Rabbi Yehuda, so what does this word Leisakiru Ponim mean? The simple meaning is, in other words, it means to recognize somebody's face and in other words to show him favoritism. Marsha points out that one thing is the word sakiru. It sounds like loy sakiru. You should not cause to recognize. So that means, in other words, there should be something missing over here. There should be an object of the sentence, and therefore, so Rabbi Yehuda im loy sakirehu. So Rabbi Yehuda says that's what it means. Don't recognize him. In other words, if he's your friend, don't say, well, I recognize him and I like him and he's my friend and therefore I'm going to judge him, because then you have bias. Rabbi Eliezer or Elazar or Meloy Sinakrehu, it means the other way around. We can also understand the word Leisakiru can mean Meloshin Nechor, as in stranger. Don't, if he's your enemy, don't treat him like a stranger and be Mechayev him. So one way or the other, don't be partial to your friend and don't be biased against your enemy. Later on in the Masechta, it talks about that technically it's not like a Dayan is usur to judge somebody who's his friend or his enemy, but nevertheless, in other words, you have to be as careful as possible to avoid any bit of bias in that. Many times you hear of stories where Rabbanim, when they would judge a Din Torah, they would have a talus covering their eyes so they don't even see the Bala Dinim, and that way they're less likely to be partial to one or the other. You have in Pirkei Avos, so what's the lashon over there when the Bali Dinim are in front of them, consider them both like Rishoyim, and then when they leave and they accepted the verdict, then you beinecha k'tzadikim k'kibul aleim as a din. So when we say consider them like Rishoyim, what we mean in other words, don't show them the slightest bit of favoritism, and don't think, well, I know this guy, he can't possibly be saying something not true. No, take everything they say with a grain of salt, basically. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Ushbizichne de Rav Osala Kame Ladina. One time Rav's host came to him for a din Torah. Often we find in many places in Shas that the Chachamim would often travel out of town to learn in Bate Medrash, out of town, sometimes even in a different country. Chacham from Babel would go to Eretz Yisrael and vice versa. And of course, when the Chacham are traveling from one city to another, around Eretz Yisrael or around Babel, they would be boarding by various people. So this guy, Rav had boarded by him for a period of time. So now this guy comes to a din Torah. Omalei, so Rav tells him, Lavush Zichniat, aren't you my host? Omalei Ein, yeah. Amalei Dina Isli. And the guy says, I have a din Torah, that's why I came here. I want you to be the Dayan. Amalei, Rav says, no, Pasilna Lachaladina, I am passeling myself to judge you because you mentioned the fact that you did me a favor, that you were my host. Neikir Adin, again, Rav wouldn't have to recuse himself from that kind of thing, but he wants to go Lefnim Ashur Adin. Amalei Rav Le Rav Kahana, Puk Dayne. So Rav tells his Talmud, Rav Kahana, go judge the guy. You be the Dayan. To have a kagoyis way. Rav Kahana saw that this guy was being very brazen. He's relying on Rav, so he's talking like in a very gaivadika way, like, you can't do anything to me, I have Rav on my side. Omalei, so Rav Kahana finally tells him, eat sisus, if you listen to what I'm telling you as a dayan, sisus, then you'll listen and everything will be good. Ve'iloi, and if not, matikna la Rav me'unach, I will take Rav out of your ear. Meaning, in other words, I'll schlep Rav out of your ear. In other words, I'm going to tell you, Rav is not going to help you at all. Meaning, Rashi says, I'm going to put you in Chedin. A different explanation. A me'unach means your strength. Don't think you have it in Meloshon Oin. So you think you have the strength that you can rely on Rav. Don't think you're going to. I'm going to show you that you don't have any support or strength from him. Tosfos brings up a point in the Gemara that if Rav Kahana were to put him in Chayrim, would he in fact, the Rav Kahana is Rav's Talmud. The Din is, the Gemara tells us in Moed Katan, that if a Talmud puts somebody in Chayrim, then he's considered in Chayrim relative to the Talmud and relative to other people, but not relative to the Rebbe. So therefore, so even if Rav Kahana puts the guy in Chayrim, big deal, that doesn't prevent him from going and talking to Rav. So Tosfos says here what he's doing, L'shem Shemayim, he's not doing because of his own personal covet, he's doing it because the guy is acting like a chutzman yakin based, and then in fact Rav would be bound by it as well. A number of achronim, the Orach HaNer, others talk about that in any case you don't really need that. Fine, the guy might still be able to talk to Rav. He's still not going to be able to talk to anybody else. It would still be a big hardship for him to be in Chayrim, and therefore that kind of threat would be enough to get him to shape up and show a little respect for Rav Kahana and his based in. Continuing with what Moshe is telling the Dayanim, he tells them, Kakoten kagodol tishmon. You have to listen to the small just as much as the great. Now, if we're just means small and great people, then again, there's no chiddush in it. If we're saying already that you're not allowed to show favoritism to anybody, then who cares whether one person is smaller and the other one is greater? So the Gemara therefore understands that it means talking about the small and greater amounts of money. Kakotin kagodot ishmoin, omrishlocha shiyechov valecha din shal pruta to din shal mea mona. A din Torah involving one pruta should be as important to you as a din Torah involving 100 mona. So the Gemara says, Lamai hilchsa. Okay, as far as what is that negea? Doesn't mean that you have to put in as much effort into it and paskin it and come up with a troop sack. Pshita. Well, of course, why would you think that you're allowed to judge unjustly just because it's a smaller amount of money? Ella, no. What it means is lack dume. It means to put it first. If you're based in docket for that day, has first a din of a pruta, and later on in the day a case comes in, a mea mana, don't say, well, you know what, we're going to do the mea mana case first, and then deal with that, and then we'll get back to the pruta one later in the day. No, you have to take the cases as they came to you in order. There are certain things elsewhere, the Gemara mentions in Shavuos, you have certain exceptions when a Talmud Chacham's case comes in, and you deal with that, then he's allowed to jump the line. When you have a Yosem or an Amana, you have certain cases where they're able to jump the line, but basically you have to go in the order in which the cases are brought to you. Marsha points out, I mean, still, what's the chiddush? I mean, for the poor person, a pruta is going to be as important to him financially as 100 mana is going to be for the rich guy. So he says the vort is like this. We talked about yesterday that the dayan is not allowed to be paid for judging dine Torah. What is he allowed? Schar batola. He's allowed to collect. He, after all, he could have been doing another job. He could have been earning money some other way during the time that he's judging a din Torah, and he's allowed to collect a fee for that. Well, if he's judging a case of a pruta, he may not be able to get anything out of it. First of all, if he charges them for that fee, then there won't be a pruta that's under discussion. And the din is, the Gemara talks about that when the case is less than a pruta, then you don't put it on the court calendar in the first place. If the case started with a pruta, and then it ends up being that it comes out that the argument that the din Torah is less than a pruta, then you continue the case. But you don't first start a case for less than a pruta. So therefore, you might have that. You might have that anyway. A pruta is not going to be enough for a schar batola. So he might think, let me do the one of 100 mana first. That way, I'll get a decent schar batola from it, and then I'll deal with the other one. No, the pasuk is telling you you can't do that. You have to do them in order.
And then
he calculates the Chayav Batala. So the figure out, like, what could he have done during that time? What other occupation could he have been doing during that time that he would have gotten? As an example, the Gemara tells us in Ksubas, there was one of the early Amiroyim, Kauna, He had a job. He had a very good sense of smell, so people would hire him to sniff their wine barrels and see which ones are going to be turning sour soon. So now, during the time when he would get paid for that, so now if instead people ask him to judge a din Torah for them, then he's entitled to collect the fee that otherwise he would have gotten for his wine sniffing. And you have other examples like that the Gemara tells over there. So regardless of the size of the din Torah, you still have to do them in order, and you can't say the one of a pruta is less important. The pasuk continues, loisa guru mipne ish, don't be afraid of a person. So we learned before, Amar Rav Chanan, al tachin sevarecha mipne ish. Doesn't just mean don't be afraid, don't hold back your words because of somebody, as we learned before, when you have a Talmud sitting in front of his Rebbe, and he realizes that his Rebbe is forgetting a certain key point that's important to the din Torah, then he's obligated to speak up, and he can't say, covered for my Rebbe should prevent me from doing that, or covered for the rich person who's one of the Bali din over here should prevent me from doing that. You can't do that. He has to speak up. He has to speak up no matter what. The pasuk continues, Ki am nishpot lelikim hu, because the judgment belongs to Hashem. Moshe continues to tell the Dayanim. So what does this mean? Means Hashem is saying, and Moshe is telling this over to the Dayanim, Loy Dayan L'Rishoyim, it's not bad enough. Look at what the Rishoyim do when they judge improperly. That they take away money improperly from one person and give it to another. Ella, they're even worse. They're bothering me. They're putting a tircha on me, so to speak, on Hashem, to return the money to its proper owner. Now, what does it mean? Obviously, there's no tircha before Hashem. So Marsha brings from Yifei Mare, one of the major Mephoshim, on Medrash, that says that sometimes Hashem has to go against Teva. Hashem has to overturn Teva in order to make that the person is going to get back his rightful money. And Hashem doesn't like doing that. Hashem, so to speak, that can be called a tircha in the sense like it goes against the way that Hashem usually likes to run the world. Then Yehoyada goes into some detail over here and talks about that, for example, you also have, because he gives examples where Hashem has to be megalgal people, and Hashem has to take them in shamas and bring them into new gilgulim in order to straighten out things that went wrong. So again, that kind of thing is Hashem doesn't really like to do that, so to speak, and therefore it can be called a tircha to Hashem. By the way, as far as the matter of the pruta and the meyamana, Ben Yehoyada brings up a couple of other points. Why would the dayan think to put the meyamana first? So again, Marashad said because chai batala. Ben Yehoyada points out another couple of things. First of all, that when you have somebody who there's a big potential judgment hanging over him, so therefore it affects his business. People are less likely to lend him money, or people are less likely to whatever. Or to extend him credit or to whatever, when they, you know, he might end up losing a huge amount of money in judgment. So therefore, the dayan might have reason to say, you know what, maybe that's a reason to move up his case first to avoid that kind of problem. Or for that matter, you might also have, if it's a case involving 100 mana, what the other Baldin may say, you know, what if I lose the case? Let me skip town. So again, maybe the Dayan would think he should maybe move the case up in order to avoid that kind of thing. Nevertheless, we're saying don't do that. If you have concerns about the guy skipping town or whatever, then you deal with those, but you don't do things out of order as far as the Dine Torah. Next, Moshe continues talking to the Dayanim. He says to them, "Ba'adova sheyikshem ikem, any matter that's too difficult for you," then he continues, "Takrivu ne'elayu shmaitiv, then you'll bring it to me and I'll hear it." So, should Moshe have said that? Omer b'chaninah v'yitem Rav Yoshia, no, al-dova zeh nenash Moshe. Moshe was later on punished for that he says in such a way, anything that's too difficult to you, bring to me, implying as though I know more than you, which is a lack of anivus. So Shanema, and you find later on when Benos Tzlofchad came to Moshe, by Yaakov Moshe, es mishpatam lifnei Hashem, Moshe brought their judgment before Hashem. Why? Because he didn't know. So therefore, so this is Hashem showing him, don't think that you know so much more than them. I'll show you there'll be a point when you don't know yourself either. However, Maskeflor of Nir, Rashi brings this on the Psukim as well. However, Maskeflor of Nachman Yitzchok, however, Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, is that really so? Miksi v'ashmiachem. After all, does Moshe tell them, and I will give it to you to hear, you bring me anything that's difficult, and I will tell you? All he says is Ushmaitiv Ksiv. He says, I will hear it. Meaning Igamuna. So if I've heard it already, if I've learned it from Hashem Gamuna, then good, I learned it and I'll tell you what it is. The Eloy, and if not, Azilno Gamuna. If not, then I will go and learn it from Hashem. Imdu Vashma, as he does by Pesach Sheni, for example. Stand here and listen, I'll hear what Hashem has to tell me. So there's no trace of Gaiva in it, says in Rachmi Yitzchok. He's telling them that, look, the fact is, I have the direct pipeline to Hashem, so if there's anything that you don't know, then I'll make use of that if necessary. So why Taka did he not know the situation by Benoist Slavchod? So there's a different reason for it. Malchow points out that, you know, you have on the Psukim, Rashi brings this point and brings it from Sifri, but nevertheless, it's odd, says Malchow, that Rashi would ignore the Gemara over here, where Rav Nachman Yitzchok is clearly saying that Moshe didn't do anything wrong. Maoshor also adds, by the way, that with Moshe saying that, it means like this. He's saying, "Ki amishpat le'kimhu." Remember that the judgment is Hashem's, and as you just said, if you judge wrongly, then so to speak, you're matriya Hashem. Now, then a potential dayan might say to himself, like we learned in the Gemara before, well, then why should I even bother with the whole trouble? I might get in trouble. What do I stand to gain from it? So he tells them, no, you will bring it to me, and if you think that then, so what are you doing? All we're doing is we're shifting the blame to you. No, because of Shmaitiv, I'll go and hear it directly from Hashem, and therefore nobody's going to be in trouble for it. Marshall continues. Marshall says, now Moshe continues them in the next pasuk. He says, "V'atzava etzem ba'isaihi es kol dvorim asher tasun." He continues, "I commanded you at that time all the things you need to do." The Gemara is going to douse in that pasuk soon. What that teaches us. But one thing Marshall says, in terms of what we're saying right now, what it means is, in future generations, look, you're not going to have this ability. You don't have this direct pipeline to have anybody go ask Hashem. But now in this generation you do. So therefore you can be sure that everything I'm telling you, Vatsava Eskam Baisahi, is definitely unquestionably Esklad Vorma Shatasun, the things that you have to do, because I heard them directly from Hashem, and there's not even a trace of a suffix, unlike in later generations.
That story about Moshe Rabbeinu sitting in the back of Rabbi Akiva and not understanding anything, that means that there is things that developed.
Well, there are a lot of different explanations why Moshe didn't understand, and one of them is because Moshe was taught all the klolim of the Torah, but not necessarily all the protim that emerged from it. Fine, but if a particular case comes up, Moshe is telling the Dayanim, if a particular case comes up, and maybe fine, I've learned the klal already for it, but I haven't learned the specific prat to be able to understand, then fine, I'll ask Hashem and he'll tell me the prat for this particular case. So continues Reb Nachman Yitzchok. So according to that way of looking at it, then what did Moshe do wrong that he should not know the story, should not know what the din is by Bnei Slavchot? Elikatatanya, like we learned in a Braisa, as we learned a few weeks back in Bava Basra. Ru'uya Parshas Nachlas Shetikosav Ayde Moshe Rabbeinu. It would have been the normal thing, the right thing would have been that the Parsha of Nachlas would have been written by Moshe Rabbeinu, as usual, by Dabar Shama Moshe Lamer, if a man dies and he has no sons, etc. Instead, you have Elisha Zochu, Bnei Slavchot, V'nichtev Al Yodin. Bnei Slavchot had the schus that it was written through them. They were Tzidkonius and Chachmonius and everything, as we learned there. We learned also their father had a certain schus, Tosfos had talked about over there, that he went on Mesiras Nefesh and broke Shabbos so that they would put him to death and everybody would realize that you don't tamper with the Kedusha of Shabbos. So they had the schus and therefore it was written through them, and therefore, in other words, Hashem caused it to happen that they're going to come with the Shaila, and then Moshe has to ask Hashem and Hashem tells it to him. Similarly, similar, this section of Mekoshesh would have been normally written through Moshe. Same idea. In other words, if a person breaks Shabbos, then he's punished with skila. But the Mekoshesh was guilty, and therefore it was written through him. Which, as we talked about then, even we say it was Slavchot, and as Tosfos says he was doing Lashem Shemayim, Marashod pointed out over there, the fact is, though objectively he did do something wrong, he was Mechalel Shabbos. Rashi even mentions on the Pesukim that it's a certain gnai for the Jewish people that they didn't even keep two Shabbosos in a row. So therefore, so there was a certain chiyuv, there was a certain thing that he did wrong, and therefore it was written through him. L'lamdecha, so this teaches you, Hashem causes negative things to happen through people who are guilty, and good things to happen through those who are worthy. So therefore, in other words, that the Mekoshesh has the blame for having broken Shabbos, and therefore because of him, that because the Parasha and the Torah was written in that way, and the most Slavchot had the schus, and therefore the Parasha and the Torah was written in that way. We learned about it in Bava Basra. Rashbam had mentioned, had explained the point of this Braisa is, you shouldn't think, well, if Bnei Slavchot hadn't come forward, we wouldn't have that parasha of Nachlas altogether. And if the Mekoshesh had never gathered wood on Shabbos, we'd never have that parasha. And who knows? Then you'd start thinking, maybe there were other parts, maybe there were other mitzvahs that were never given because the circumstance never came up. No, the Braisa wants you to know, those mitzvahs would have been given regardless. And in these particular cases, Hashem caused them to be given through these events because Megagolim, Schosal, Dezakai, etc. Anyway, the point is, Reb Nachman Yitzchok is saying, so the fact that Moshe didn't know what the answer is, by Bnei Slavchot, is nothing against him. It's Hashem made it happen that way because of the schus of Bnei Slavchot, so they should have the schus that through them an extra section is written in the Torah. Well, not an extra section, but a section. In other words, the section would have been regardless, but they have the schus that it was brought about through their request. Okay. Getting back to Moshe's instructions to the and when he finishes talking to the Dayanim, he says Vatsava, he starts by saying Vatsava Shiftechem Ba'isahi. He begins by saying, I commanded your judges at that time. So in other words, he's giving instructions specifically to the Chachamim about how they should be running things and do things, as Rashi explains. Even Al Korcham, even if the Jewish people don't want to accept their judgments, nevertheless they have to enforce them. Then at the end, Moshe says, "Vatsava eschem va'isahi." I commanded you at that time, implying that Moshe is commanding to the tzibur. So what is he commanding to the tzibur at that point? Now, Poshet Pshat, Marshal points out, is telling them that you have to keep the mitzvah. And as Marshal had just said, it also means, in other words, you should know that every single thing I'm telling you is explicitly piagvura, is from Hashem, and you should have no suffix whether it's correct or not. But still, the Gemara is bothered by the fact, Marsha explains, Vatsavas Shiftechem implies I'm giving instructions to the Shoftim and not to the rest of the Jewish people. So then Vatsava Eschem sounds like an instruction to everybody else, but not to the judges. So what would that be? If it's telling them, keep the mitzvahs, that applies equally well to the judges as to everybody else. So, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Simloi, as Horel Tzibur Shetei Emas Dayan Aleihem, it's a warning to the Tzibur, that they have to have fear and respect for the Dayan. And vice versa, it's an instruction to the Dayan that he has to tolerate the Tzibur. Even if they're going to, Rashi explains, even if they're going to talk chutzpidik, not chutzpidik, fine, then he'll put them in nidui if need be, but even if they're going to talk against him or whatever, he still shouldn't be bothered by it. So ad kama, how much does the dayan have to tolerate misbehavior by the tzibur? Amar Rav Chanan, v'itamer Rav Shamsoi, as Moshe says about himself, kasha yisah ha'omin as hayonik, like the way that a noose maid carries a baby, taking tremendous loving care of it, no matter how much the baby is crying and colicky and then wetting itself and whatever, the noose maid, the mother, tolerates and then not only tolerates, loves the baby with every fiber that they've got. That's how a dayan has to be to the people, no matter how hard they make it for him. So Marsha summarizes, in other words, that we see if Moshe was saying about himself that he's doing that, so now when he's appointing Shoftim, he would have been telling them that they have to feel the same way towards the people. Now, in that connection, the Gemara says, for now, years later, Moshe is giving instructions to Yeshua when he's going to take over. At near the beginning of Parshas Vayelech, Moshe tells Yeshua, you will be coming. You will be coming with this people. Implying, in other words, like you're on an equal level with them. Then later on in the parasha, you have Hashem tells Yeshua, "Ki ata savi," that you will bring them. In other words, you're going to be the leader and you're going to be bringing them in. So what is it? Amar Rav Yochanan, it means Amalei Moshe LeYeshua. It means originally Hashem and Moshe told Yeshua, "Atavas kenim shabadiri mahim." It's going to be a joint effort. You together with the skenim are going to be leading the people. So in other words, pay attention to what the skenim say. Don't lord it over them. And Marsha teaches out further. It goes together with what we just said, that you have to be kasha yisa oimin asayonif. You have to be able to tolerate the tzibur. But the truth is, though, Moshe, in his times, had a great deal of difficulty with it. In fact, that pasuk, Kasha Yisrael Urban Asayonik, is part of Moshe complaining to Hashem, Lord, the people are harassing me and giving me such a hard time, I can't deal with it anymore. And Hashem tells him, fine, you'll appoint Shivim Skenim. Now, that was in Moshe's times. On the other hand, Marsha points out that in Yeshua's times, they were much better off. There the Jewish people were taka obeying Hashem, and they were Bali Torah, and they were able to be Zoycha and to go into Eretz Yisrael. So Moshe figures, and he tells Yeshua, so fine, you're not going to need to handle all the people by yourself. So Moshe figures when he's telling Yeshua, as far as I know, the people are going to be just as difficult for you as they were for me. So be aware, you're going to need Skenim to help you handle them, just like I did. But meanwhile, Hashem is going to tell them differently, as we're going to go on to say. In fact, it's interesting. I want, over a number of times in Chumash, you have the expression by Yoloinu Ha'am, the people complained over and over again by the mon and by the swab and by the water and this and that. In Sefer Yeshua, you have exactly one time where it says by Yoloinu Ha'am, and that's when they mistakenly accepted the Givonim and made a peace treaty with them, and everybody complained. Hayitochen, now we can't do the mitzvah of Lo Yisachayek on the Shama. So we see, like what. Marsha is saying, they were on a lot better level. Anyway, so that's Moshe tells them. On the other hand, Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but Hashem tells Yeshua, Tol makil v'hachal kodkodem. If necessary, take a stick and hit them over the head with it. You got to be the boss. Dabar echad l'dur v'le shnei dabarim l'dur. There can only be one leader for the generation, not two. So therefore, no, it's not going to be a joint effort. Now, Marsha explains, that's the point. In other words, Moshe thinks the people are going to be for you, Yeshua, the same way as they were for me. So they're going to give you a hard time. You're going to need the skenim to help you out. Hashem tells him, no. The people of Yeshua's times are going to be much better than the ones of your time, Moshe. He's not going to need skenim to help him. So you have to have Ema on them. You're going to be the exclusive leader. A couple of Mephoshim talk about the Iyun Yaakov points out also there was a point in Bava Basra where we had learned the expression that Moshe's face was like the sun, Yeshua's face was like the moon, and therefore, in other words, Moshe figured, you know what, if Yeshua is like the moon is accompanied by the stars, the same way Yeshua has to be accompanied by the Skenim. And Hashem tells him, no. This is the first, Dabar Echad L'dur, V'lo Shnei Dabarim L'dur. Sicha in Chelek Yud Zayin actually, where the Rebbe talks about this for Parshas Vayelech and explains another angle on what Moshe was thinking and what Yeshua and what Hashem tells him is Moshe's style of leadership and Yeshua's are going to be very different, and in a way that ever develops the idea over there, even though we talk about that Yeshua was on a lower level, he's only Pnei Levana. On the other hand, that has a certain mila over the leadership of the son, even. It's a cotton, it's a smaller one, but in a certain way it has a greater mila. And therefore, in other words, it's time for Moshe's type of leadership is going away, and Yeshua's kind of leadership is completely taking over. That explains there, when it says the expression, Lo shnei davarim l'dor, it doesn't mean just mean Yeshua and the skenim. It means Yeshua and Moshe. There's no more leadership of Moshe anymore, exclusively Yeshua. And the Rebbe develops the idea there in the Sicha, the same way people, he talks about, for example, the Friedrich Rebbe and our Rebbe began various new forms of Avoida, Mitzoyim, and Shlichos and all that, and people wonder, well, Hayitochen, it was never needed in previous generations. Well, Dabar Achal Ledur, Veloshinei Dabar Am Ledur. Every Dur has its Anhaga, and that's the exclusive Anhaga, and don't start looking at how things were in previous generations.
Okay. I'm sorry, but Moshe was too high for this level.
That Moshe was too high for, well, that's kind of the thing. He had needed the skenim to be like almost like go-betweens between him and the Jewish people, sort of.
Yeah.
Was more together with them, yeah. But ultimately, we're saying that, yeah, he has to show that he's the soul leader, yeah. So now the Ein Yaakov interjects over here a piece from Sota, which is not here in Sanhedrin. This piece in parentheses over here is actually from the Gemara in Sota, illustrating this idea of how a leader of the Jewish people has to deal with the people. V'chein b'David hu oimer. We find an expression by David HaMelech. V'yokam David al raglav. David got up on his feet. This is talking about when he gathered the people together to tell them, I'm getting ready to build the Bais Hamikdash. I'm not going to build it myself. It's going to be left for Shlomo to do it. But I've gathered together an enormous amount of resources for it, and now I want everybody else to join in contributing towards the Bais Hamikdash, towards the future Bais Hamikdash as well. In fact, the pasuk says that people did donate a tremendous amount. That was when David said the tefillah, Vayivorech David, that we say every day in davening, comes from that David said a tefillah of gratitude and thanks to Hashem that the people were so generous. The pasuk that we have in Pirkei Avos also, Kimimcha HaKorlam Yodcha Nasan Nulach, which is in last week's Pirkei Avos, and when we say in Uvolot Tzi, in Hashem Elokei Avraham Yitzchak Yisrael Shomer Zos La'olam, all of those are psukim from that tefillah that David said on that occasion. Anyway, so the pasuk says, Vayokam David al raglav, David got up on his feet, Vayomer, and he says, Shmo'uni Achai Va'ami, listen to me, my brothers and my people. Now, why the double expression? And it seems almost contradictory. Im achai loma ami vim ami loma achai. Achai means my brother is on an equal level with me, but ami means my people. That I'm your ruler. So which is it? Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Lahem David Yisrael. That's exactly what David is telling him. Im atem shemim li, if you listen to me, achai atem, then you're my brothers, and I'll treat you as equals. Vim lav, but if not, ami atem, then be aware, you fought my people, and I'm your king, vani roide eschem amaklas, and I will dominate you with sticks if necessary. So the same way over here, same idea as over here, where Hashem is telling Yeshua, if need be, use a stick and hit them over the head, because they need to know that there's only one leader. So that's as far as a Malamed that I'm describing based on a Gemara and Baba Master. It should be like a Ritzuk Tana, a small strap or like a ruler or something. Yeah. Yeah. Some similar idea, yeah. So a couple of blocks later, the Gemara, after this whole piece of Agadta, the Gemara gets into a discussion, one of the things in the Mishnah, when it talks about the various numbers of Dayanim you need for different purposes. You have the case of Motzi Shemra, when a husband accuses his wife of possibly having been Mizaneh. It's going to be in tomorrow's or the next day's Rambam Shlosh HaPrakim is going to be all about it. So you need a Beis Din to judge the case, and there's Machlokas in the Mishnah, whether you need 3 or 23. Maybe 3 because it's only Dinim Mominus, but there can be Dinim Nefarshes involved, so maybe 23. So the Gemara gets into a long discussion about the different opinions, and in the course of that discussion, the Gemara brings the following piece. Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah, it's a Mishnah in Makkos. Now like this, the Pasuk says, Alpi shnei edim o shlosha edim, that you have 2 or 3 edim. So the question is, if 2 is enough, why does it need to mention 3? So Rabbi Akiva Omer, loy bosh shlishi ela lahachmer olav. The reason why the Pasuk says 3 is to be machmer on him, velasif dine kayotze be'elu. To say that his judgment, his his fate is going to be the same as the others. Meaning, if they turn out to be Edim Zomimin, all three of them are going to be punished, even though he could say, well, why should I be punished along with them? There would have been a perfectly good Edis without me. But because he joined together with other Edim Zomimin, then he gets judged together with them as well. And Rabbi Akiva says, Im kein onash hakotzav the nitbol, or as a nitbol, over avera, ka over avera. If that's how harshly we see that the Torah punishes somebody who just joins in and helps out people who do an Avera. Again, he was completely unnecessary. He was a perfectly good Eidos without him. And nevertheless, he's punished like the ones who actually did the Avera, the original two Eidim. Allah has kama v'kama, how much more so? She shalom scharis and mitzvah lois and mitzvah that Hashem will reward, because always midah tova merubah, midah sporanis, that Hashem will reward as a mitzvah lois and mitzvah, somebody who joins together with those who do a mitzvah, ka'os and mitzvah, exactly like those who do the mitzvah, even though their contribution may not have been necessary, but nevertheless Hashem will reward him for joining up with them and helping to do the mitzvah.
You need only two.
But the point is, as far as the case of the Motzi Shemra, so it's Machlokas in the Mishnah. So that's the reason why the Gemara brings this point in is because the Gemara says, let's say, for example, you have three Edim, and two of them turned out to be Edim Zomimin, and the third one not. Can we judge any part of the case at all now? Or do we just have to throw out the whole case? Or do we say we can still at least judge the Dinim Mominis part of it? Yom Yen Mashiach Ugo'ola, Yud Ir. Today is Yud Ir, right? Yeah. So we're holding already now on an Elef HaShishi, which corresponds to Yom HaShishi. We're in already Erev Shabbos Lacha Chatzos. This is a Sifah in Nun Aleph, Sifah in Nun Aleph and Nun Beis. So based on all the Simone Agola, we really are very close to the Gola, and therefore it's Azman Grama to start preparing the actual preparations for Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, Lech Lecha Le'artzecha, Ela Artz HaShar HaRekha, Taker from Yad Mamash. Halachas of tzitzis, we begin simin yud beis, which is things that passel tzitzis. So we learned before that the minimum length of each string, once they're folded over and knotted and wound and the whole thing, has to be 12 gudlim, which we said 12 gudlim, according to Avraham Chaim Noah, is about 9 inches. If after you put on the tzitzis, all the strings got broken off, and each one of the original four long strings is only enough to make an aniva, to make a bow tie or a slip knot around the remaining strings. So then it would still be kosher. So in other words, you have the eight hanging strings are broken, and if you look at the original threads, it would have to be long enough that there would be long enough to make three slip knots around one other thread. If only seven of the hanging strings are broken, you still have to have enough. You have to have enough of a length to be able to make three times an aniva. If you still have that, then it's kosher. Yes, omrim, that it would be kosher even if each of the long strings is only enough to make one aniva together out of all the remaining, together with all of the remaining pieces. However, yes, lahachmer kusvara rishonim, it should be machmer like the first one. So it has to be that each one would be long, and so it would have to be, in other words, that each one of the individual strings, there's enough of a length in it still to make a slip knot. So the Shiurei Torah from Rabbi Chaim Noah gives the minimum as a little over 1.5 inches. So after the last knot, you have at least a little over 1.5 inches, then b'dieved that string is still good. So that's what we're talking about, if all or most of them. So in the next sif, the Alter Rebbe continues and talks about that if you have 5 out of the 8 were broken. If only 4 out of the 8 were broken, then it's fine. Even if there's less than that left of them, if they're all on one side of the knot, then you were careful when you made the tzitzis to have the same strings on each side of the knot the whole time. I don't know how commercial tzitzis are made necessarily in this regard, but when I tie tzitzis myself, for example, what I do is I first take 4 strings and make a knot of the 4 of them, then I go and make the tzitzis. That way it guarantees the whole, every time you're making a knot, the same 4 ends are going to be on one side of the knot, and the other 4 ends are going to be on the other side of it. So now the result is, when you do it that way, you know at the end that of the 8 hanging strings, necessarily the four on one side of the knot are one end of each of the 4 original strings, and the other side is the other end of it. So now, even if 4 What?
Everybody does it like that.
Everybody does it like that? Okay, I guess it's not a patent that I invented myself. Okay, good to know. Okay, so in any case, so then if you do it that way, then if you don't do it that way, then you're going to have every time you make the knot, and then you take the, and then you have the seven swings and the shamash over there. You never know which ones are ending up on which side, and you can end up with two ends of the same swing on the same side of the knot. Then it doesn't work as well. Then taka, if you have four of them broken, two of them may be from the two or more of them may be from the same long swing, and then you have a problem. But if you were careful like that, then at least you have four of them are broken, and then you're fine, because then each of the long ones does have today on the okay, again, that's only if they're on one side of the knot. If they're on two sides, then you don't have that kind of thing, because then you don't know, they might be from one long string, and then you have a problem, and then it's possible. Now, it never goes into some details over here about exactly in what cases it would be kosher and which ones it would be possible, depending on how the tzitzis were strung originally.